Echo Plus.
Hello and welcome to Echo Plus. My name's John Harrison. Today we're going to discuss a major problem that has been building up for a long time, and yet one that we human beings tend to neglect. That is the extinction of a large number of our cohabitants on this planet. That is animals, particularly vertebrates. When I hear about this, I tend to think about the well-published decimation of rhinos or elephants because of hunting. But the problem is apparently a lot more serious, even though that is serious enough. Since 1500, more than 320 terrestrial vertebrates have gone. Populations of the remaining species show a 25% average decline. We seem to be reaching a tipping point. But how serious is this really, and how will this affect human life on this, our planet? I'm honored to be joined by two experts to discuss this topic, Professor of Biology Rodolfo Dierzo from Stanford University and Professor Gerardo Ceballos from the Instituto de Ecología at the National Autonomous University of Mexico. Thank you very much for joining us today, both of you.
Good morning.
Thank you very much.
Professor Dierzo, may I start the first question, please? You have named this phenomenon the world's sixth mass extinction and have called this the Anthropocene deformation. How does this differ from other mass extinctions?
Yeah, thank you so very much. It's a pleasure to be with you. The main characteristics of this ongoing extinction is that in this particular case, it is one factor that is the main driver of the process. In this case, it is another that humans, Homo sapiens, is very much in contrast to what happened in previous extinctions, in which it was a natural phenomenon, a catastrophic phenomenon such as a meteorite, something like that.
That's a very clear definition. Thank you very much. Now, Professor Ceballos, perhaps you could inform us, which animals are we talking about here?
We're talking about cockatoos, macaws, wolves, really a huge array of animals that have become extinct in the last 500 years. Most of them, all of them have become extinct because of human activities, and most of them have become extinct in the last 100 years.
Why are some species become extinct over 500 years and some become extinct over 100 years?
But let's remind the public, our audience, that most of the species were not even discovered or described scientifically until the 1800s and 1900s.
Yeah.
So, in this particular case, what really gives us a much better idea of what is becoming extinct is the last 100 years, because it's when we have a good scientific record of what plants and animals are on Earth and what of those animals have become extinct.
Now, if we look at the animal world in general, which kind of animal, and I'm talking about very simply small animals, large animals, are in the worst off situation if we take the last 100 years because of anthropogenic influences?
Typically, we have found that in vertebrates, animals with bones, it is the largest species that are much more vulnerable to extinction. Large animals are easier to hunt. They are more sought by humans. They have more value from the point of view of the ivory or the pelt or things like that. But in our study, we have discovered that in addition to that idea that we had more or less in our minds, the invertebrates, the animals with no bones, are also being dramatically affected.
Mm-hmm.
One iconic point that represents that situation, that very dire situation at the moment, is the fact that over the last 40 to 50 years, in which the human population has increased by doubling its size, about 40% of the invertebrates that have been investigated have shown a dramatic decline in their abundance of 40% of their original numbers as they were reported 40 years ago.
Yeah.
Something that I'd like to add is that in the last, at the beginning of the last 100 years, most of the large mammals of birds were vulnerable to extinction. But what we find out with this study is that in the last two, three decades, all animals, large and small bone animals, vertebrates, are vulnerable. And what we find is that in the last 20 years, most of the extinct vertebrates have been amphibian, and they have become extinct because of effects of climate change on their population. They are very vulnerable. What we have seen is a transition from large, very huge animals, conspicuous animals, becoming extinct, to basically all kind of animals becoming extinct. And that is what is very, very worrying, because now it seems that the extinction episode is affecting basically all kinds of animals. animals, large and small, invertebrates and vertebrates, and that is what it's our paper about. We're calling the attention of the public, of the politicians, that this is a massive loss of a species that has important implications on human well-being.
So we're talking about a sort of double whammy effect then, aren't we? We're talking about climate change, which is affecting us anyway. And on top of all that, we're talking about human beings going out there hunting, clearing forests, creating new urban environments which are concreting over large amounts of basically earth. And all this is having, it's just a compounding effect, isn't it?
Exactly. So we scientists used to think or used to analyze the factors of loss of animal life, the factors of animal life loss, or extinction in general, to be driven by elements such as these.
Yeah.
Destruction of habitats, on the one hand, that's perhaps the most well-recognized factor of extinction. Second is the overexploitation of animals. And then you have things such as environmental pollution, contaminants, and then invasive species, and lately, climate change. But what we're trying to emphasize in our study is that we should move from the idea of just considering one factor at a time. Unfortunately, as we move forward, unfortunately, all of those factors are combining amongst themselves to create a much more dire situation.
So perhaps it's time to rethink our approach to the planet, and instead of these two sciences being different, you know, or three or four, climate change, anthropogenic factors, urbanization, and so on, perhaps it's time to look at this whole thing sequentially, holistically, and combine all of these things together to help us come to some kind of sense, make sense of what's going on.
Yes, absolutely.
And if we don't do something strict and solid to try to cope with it, we will lose many, many species, and we will see many repercussions on human well-being.
Yeah, and I think we tend to forget that we are also a species.
Echo Plus.
Welcome back to Echo Plus program. Today we're talking about what's called Anthropocene deformation, and I'd like to talk about the effect on agriculture.
One of the very important issues here, for instance, you mentioned agriculture,
yep,
is pollinators. Bees, hummingbirds, bats, and so on, and insects are the main pollinators of many plants, both in natural systems and agricultural systems. If we lose those pollinators, we're losing the capabilities of our agricultural system of producing, and this is one question. And the other huge issue is that many, many emerging or re-emerging diseases are associated to the loss of animals or to the exploitation of animals. The Ebola problem in Africa is related to a couple of things. One is consumption of animals, of monkeys or other bush meat, as they call it. So these particular two issues have caused the perfect conditions to have an Ebola problem there. If we don't stop losing so many populations and so many species, we are in the possibility of having a big collapse of our agricultural systems, and this will have immense, immense repercussions on the social, political, like economic conditions on Earth.
It seems to me that nature is very kind to us, and it doesn't do things in huge catastrophic steps. It does things fairly slowly. I mean, changes have occurred in my lifetime, but we have somehow learned how to get around them. If there was going to be a major catastrophe and 1.5 million people are going to die from Ebola, then maybe we'd do something about it.
That service of the pollinators, the concept that Professor Ceballos mentioned, ecosystem services, that, for example, could be translated in economic terms. In about 10% of the total cost of agriculture or food production in the world, losing the pollinators would imply the reduction of the capacity of 75% of our crops to be pollinated, seeds and fruit, and that represents about 10% of the food production globally.
Yeah.
In the case of other animals that play a very important role as controls of pests, agricultural pests, many pests are controlled by other animals, and so losing those animals that operate as biological controls also represents a dramatic impact on our food production system. In the case of the U.S. alone, for example, the loss of the animals that control pests of agricultural systems, that represents about $4.5 billion on an annual basis. So that's really, really significant from the point of view of food production and from the point of view of economics as well.
This is a problem that's real, isn't it? I mean, this could happen in our lifetimes or not.
This is very important what you say, because so far it seems to be gradual. And we're used to that it is gradual loss of species and loss of environmental services, and we have been able to cope with. What we are right now, we are really reaching a tipping point. In our lifetime, there could be a huge collapse. And let me put you an example for our public audience. Mm-hmm. If we have a wall and you have bricks, it's like if we have been taking bricks from that wall, and that wall has stacked to work less properly, there is wind or noise or whatever, but the wall is still there. We're reaching a point in which we're going to take another brick, another species, another set of species, and we are in the possibility of the whole wall collapsing.
Yeah.
This is what is happening in nature. Unless we change dramatically the way we do business on Earth, there is a real possibility of a global collapse between 2040 and 2050, or even earlier.
Yeah.
So we're really facing what we think is the strongest and hardest and more threatening problem that humanity has faced since it emerged. So that is the urgency of message. That is the urgency that we need to act now, because there is no time to teach the children about this.
The combination of the different drivers of environmental change that we have mentioned, that we have discussed, fortunately, as we said, they're operating now in synergies. They're reinforcing themselves. And that has led us to collectively come to the conclusion that we are really talking about just a few decades. A common consensus is that by the 2050s, the situation might come to a point in which you come to the situation in which you remove the last brick. Now, the last rivet of a structure and last rivet of that last brick can actually cause the collapse. And, of course, we know that the planet has experienced those kinds of situations in the past. We do know that that's a real ecological phenomenon. It is called a paradigm shift. It's called a paradigm change in ecological conditions. Imagine when the dinosaurs went extinct.
Yeah.
You know, after that, the world did not disappear as a whole, but the world was modified in such a way that life had to be in very different ways.
What are we going to do about this? And if I understand what you've just said, is that we have the technology available. All of our countries, we have the technology. We can change. We can change our ways of functioning, producing food. And as human societies, we can change. But we don't want to do that. Now, how do we want to do it? How do we change as a human species to want to do that? Has anybody got any ideas?
Well, we need to do a number of things.
Yeah.
In practical terms, there's a number of immediate actions that we could take. Modify the crazy emphasis on the use of pesticides. That's one. We need to stop. Really, we need to make a commitment as society, global society, to stop habitat destruction. If we were to commit to a situation such as zero habitat destruction as from tomorrow, that would make a tremendous change in the positive sense. We should have to be able to stop, as a society, to stop the overexploitation of animals. Why do we need to continue killing elephants for the sake of the ivory trade? Those are things that we could do definitely. But another thing that is really, really very critical, and that's related to what we're doing at the moment, is we need to make sure that the public, and particularly the policymakers, understand what is at stake. What we're doing now, having this program with you, trying to discuss and illuminate about what is at stake is another critical issue. And I think that if we engage in those kinds of activities as we speak, basically as we hang up the phone and finish this program, we start doing those actions, I think we should be on the hopeful side where we cannot recuperate what we have already killed, damaged, and eliminated, but we could do something to what in terms of what is left and hope for a better planet for our children and grandchildren.
We need to act. We need to act today. Tomorrow will be too late.
Yeah. Okay, I think I hear you loud and clear. There's two things that I've got from both of you today. Firstly, that we need to maybe relook at this whole scientific way we're looking at the problems. Can maybe combine climate change with anthropogenic other factors such as urbanization and so on. And the second thing is that we've got to start moving really, really quickly.
Exactly.
Thank you very much indeed, Professor Dizzo and Professor Sobalis, and thank you very, very much, listeners, for being with us today. Next week, we're going to continue with this theme. We're going to talk to Professor Hilary Young from the University of California about the effect of deforestation on plant life and the consequent knock-on effect on the food supply. Goodbye.
Thank you so much.
Goodbye.